Thank you. So I want to start with a quote by a former tennis star, Martina Navratilova. And if you've been following the world of gender politics in sports, you may have an idea of one of the many quotes that I might be talking about, and rest assured, we're going to get there. But this, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. But this is actually going to go back to, I want to go back to 2013, when Navratilova wrote for Sports Illustrated about Jason Collins, the first NBA player to come out as gay. And I'm actually getting this from a talk that you gave Dave Zirin. So thank you, Dave Zirin, everyone. And this is what she wrote. Collins has led the way to freedom. Yes, freedom. Because that closet is completely and utterly suffocating. It's only when you come out that you can breathe properly. It's only when you come out that you can be exactly who you are. Collins' actions will save lives. This is no exaggeration. Fully one-third of suicides among teenagers occur because of their sexuality. Collins will truly affect lives, too. Millions of kids will see that it is okay to be gay. No need for shame, no need for embarrassment, no need for hiding. Now that Collins has led this watershed moment, I think and hope there will be an avalanche. Come out wherever and whoever you are. It is beautiful out here, and I guarantee you this. You will never, ever want to go back. You will only wonder why it took so long. Reading these words in preparation for this talk actually brought me to tears. The attempted suicide rate for trans teens is about 40%. That number drops dramatically with family and community support. Communities like athletics programs can be a lifeline for queer and trans youth alike. Navratilova seems to see this so clearly for LGB youth, going so far as to call Collins a lifesaver, but she is somehow blinded by outdated ideas when it comes to trans girl athletes. If an out male athlete saying it's okay to be gay is a lifesaver, then what do we call a lesbian athlete who says it is cheating to be who I am? But let me take a step back for a second and talk a little bit about who I am. In the words of my hero, Caster Semenya, I am a woman and I run fast. I'm a proud trans woman athlete. I play Ultimate Frisbee, which if you don't know about Ultimate Frisbee, I recommend please Google it. Okay, thank you. I fell in love with the sport in 2003 when I was a freshman in high school. I left every other sport for it. I didn't apply to a single college or university that didn't have an Ultimate Frisbee team. Since then, I've played at all different levels, from recreational leagues to the national stage, mixed teams and women's teams, on two continents, in three countries. I've left my blood on the field. I've left my tears on the field. I've left everything I had left in my muscles and my heart on the field. I've been injured and I've been healed by Ultimate. In Ultimate, we have this concept called the spirit of the game. The spirit of the game is defined as the mindful behavior practiced by players worldwide prior to, during, and after a game. It encompasses attitudes and skills such as good knowledge and application of the rules, fair-mindedness, safe play, spatial awareness, clear and calm communication, and positive and respectful attitude towards teammates, fans, and opponents in a mutual effort to protect the basic joy of play. I love this. I haven't always had the best spirit. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that. But this idea that the basic joy of play is the central tenet of sports, it's the central tenet that we have to protect, has never left me. Largely because of this, I have grown up in the Ultimate community. It's become my home, it's become my community, and it's become my lifeline. So this history is why reading those more recent comments made by Martina Navratilova was such a betrayal to me. Many of you may have seen the pioneering lesbian athlete who had nothing but beautiful things to say about Collins coming out, viciously attacking and misrepresenting trans women athletes. She said in a recent article earlier this year, to put the argument at its most basic, a man can decide to be female, take hormones if it's required by whatever sporting organization is concerned, win everything in sight, and perhaps earn a small fortune, and then reverse his decision, go back to making babies if he so desires. It's insane and it's cheating. Yeah, it's exactly. Navratilova's argument not only ignores the fact that sports are necessarily a field where talent and training often overshadow whatever quote-unquote natural physical ability someone might have, a fact which she later admits, but it also ignores the realities of transitioning in a world and a healthcare system that often does not believe trans women should exist. Even meeting the bare standards that the International Olympic Committee has put forward for what it means to transition is absolutely unattainable for poor trans women, for many women of trans women of color, for immigrant trans women, for refugee trans women. It's not even possible. So, yeah. But by setting up a false dichotomy between transgender, quote-quote, and transsexual, quote-quote, athletes, where she describes transsexual athletes as having had the deed done surgically, Navratilova far too casually argues that if trans women want to be able to compete in sports, we must be sterilized. Communities around the world were shocked to hear that a Japanese court upheld a ruling which made forced sterilization a prerequisite for transitioning legally in that country. Yet, that is the case in almost every single state in the US. If you want that little F on your license, you have to be sterilized. So what's worse is that there's no scientific evidence to suggest that trans women athletes following IOC guidelines have any competitive edge over cis women athletes, which International Olympic Committee has said repeatedly. But maybe it goes without saying and that it's completely illogical and reactionary to suggest that somehow sterilization has any effect on athletic ability. It's petty, it's bitter, and it's a very dangerous argument that historically has led down really, really treacherous roads. But let's just take what she says at face value. Let's do a test of Navratilova's argument that trans women will just come in and win everything in sight. I have a question for the audience. Can anybody name a trans woman competing as a trans woman who's won an Olympic medal in any sport? She's not trans, she's cis. Yeah. No, you can't. You can't. Because no trans woman has ever even qualified for the Olympics. And the Olympic policy on trans athletes has existed since 2004, that's the first Olympics that a trans athlete could have competed in, which means it's been 15 years, and no trans woman has ever even qualified for the Olympics. That actually may change because there is a Brazilian athlete, I can't remember what event, but there's a woman in Brazil who may qualify for the Olympics next year, but yeah. I know, right, exactly, for the first fucking time, congratulations. And you know what she's gonna do? She's just gonna come in when everything is set. No, I'm just kidding. So this was actually the beginning of an epic Twitter evisceration of common turf arguments penned by Bryn Tanhill, author of Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Trans But Were Too Afraid to Ask. Tanhill, I hope I'm saying her name right, but Tanhill then goes on to list, quote, what she describes as every major female trans athlete in the last 40 years. It's a pretty long list, so. Fallon Fox, Rachel Evans, Renee Richards, that's it. who have actually gone on a major national stage and actually won at all, anything. She concludes, we have thoroughly field tested the hypothesis that transgender athletes will dominate if they are allowed to compete, and statistically we can reject this hypothesis with a high degree of certainty. I love that. Tanhill leaves out a couple of details. First, and maybe the most ironic for me, is that Renee Richards, a trans woman tennis player, competed against Martina Navratilova 3 times and lost every time. So, you'd think. But anyway, Second, there has been one and only one trans woman who has won a world title, any world title at all, since 2004. Dr. Rachel McKinnon, who in October 2018 won a gold medal in the Cycling Masters World Track Championship in Los Angeles. So this is like one leg of like this world cycling championship that goes on leg after leg after leg throughout the year, right? And most of the time she was like back of the pack. She just had a really good race. But unsurprisingly, this triggered an avalanche of attacks from TERFs in the far right. McKinnon said that she received somewhere around 100,000 hateful messages online and in actual print mail. Navratilova and others like her obscure the actual source of McKinnon's win. And this is really important for me. When asked by Velo News if she had an unfair advantage, McKinnon replied by listing her less than perfect record, she's usually like middle of the pack, and saying, "People who oppose transgender inclusion in sport put us in a double bind. It's the damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. If I win, they attribute it to me being trans and having an unfair advantage. If I lose, the same exact people think I must not be good anyway. People will never attribute my winning to hard work, which is what I think I deserve." Anyway, so let's get on to biological determinism. Biological determinism is defined as the idea that all human behavior is innate, determined by genes, brain size, and other biological attributes. This theory stands in contrast to the notion that human behavior is determined by culture and other social forces. So you know, what a Marxist idea. No, I'm just kidding. Biological determinism comes in all different shapes and sizes. For example, like in my lift over here, humans are just inherently selfish and greedy. So socialism obviously won't work. I mean, that's biological determinism, as if we can't go beyond whatever that is. Biological determinism is common among just about everyone who wants to control and limit the bodily autonomy and of their political rivals and those that they are oppressing. This means that TERFs use it to attack trans women, but also that racists use it to attack non-whites. There was like an idea that black women can't compete against white women for some of the exact same reasons, like bone density. There was this idea that black women had more oxygenated blood, and so clearly they can't compete. Yeah, exactly, superhuman, right? And it's obviously been used by men to attack women. Women are just hysterical, like we can't have control over our bodies because we can't think clearly, blah, blah, blah. Realistically, there's no such thing as biological determinism. We know this as Marxists. That's not to say that biology has no effect on our lives, but that human beings have, through cooperation and ingenuity, transcended many of our biological limitations. For instance, sports. Some humans are faster and stronger than humans really should be naturally because we've been able to harness our intelligence to think about nutrition and training and manipulate our bodies to levels of fitness that would otherwise be impossible. It's not a level of fitness that, like, for instance, I don't know, a monkey could get to. Maybe they can, I don't know, maybe they can. But whatever, I mean, we couldn't because we would just be, I don't know, sitting somewhere, whatever. So what's the alternative, right? If our athletic ability is not solely determined by our genes, then what else is there, right? For Marxists, there's no question as to what else. We understand that environmental racism and classism keep people from sports. We understand that food scarcity, food deserts keep people from sports. Access to facilities and coaching staff keep people from participation in sports. The stability to dedicate resources to the pursuit of athletics in all shapes and forms is limited when we live in a capitalist society. Not only that, but women have historically been kept out of sports in general. So women have not been able to participate in sports and actually achieve what men have been able to achieve because men have been allowed to, from a very early age, train for these particular sports. So, evolutionary biologist Stephen Jay Gould once said, "I am somehow less interested in the weight and convolutions of Einstein's brain than in the near certainty that people of equal talent have lived and died in cotton fields and sweatshops." This is the crux of arguments against biological determinism for me. I'm much less interested in the achievements of male athletes than in the near certainty that women of equal talent have been kept off the field or forced to slow down. I'm convinced that there are women who are capable of setting world records. In almost every event, the question is, do we yet live in a society or a world where women are allowed to be greater than men? Until the answer to this question is yes, until we cultivate not just the somewhat talented daughters of the 1%, but every single girl who wants to compete in any sport, until such a time as we have fully tested this hypothesis, I refuse to believe biology is even the most important equation in athletic performance. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the strange bedfellows of TERFs and the right wing, because I think that this is really important. So we find TERFs and the right wing working together to undermine trans athletes. Recently, Julia Beck, a self-proclaimed lesbian feminist, testified to the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security against the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which is wild. She argued against it, and it also failed to get reauthorized this week, I believe. So there you go. Beck, who spoke to Fox News' Tucker Carlson in February and the Heritage Foundation in January, testified that transgender women would harm cis women in shelters and therefore must be removed from the provision or it should not be reauthorized. Far from being a threat, though, trans women are some of the most vulnerable to abuse. A 2015 survey conducted by the National Center for Transgender Equality found that 54% of trans women have reported experiencing some form of intimate partner violence, which is one of the most common reasons women seek shelter. Yeah, let that percolate a little bit. Of course, statistics and facts don't seem to matter to Beck or her Republican friends in Congress, but you'd think that they would matter for Navratilova. Although she supposedly regrets the right wing seizing upon her words, her tirade was used by Republican Representative Lee Qualm to defend South Dakota Bill 1225, which would have forced high school students to compete in sports based on the sex on their birth certificate. Thankfully, that bill failed 34-34 in a 34-34 deadlock, but it was the fourth anti-trans bill this year alone in South Dakota. This year alone in South Dakota. The alliance of anti-trans feminists and the right goes back at least 40 years. As laid out in an incredibly thorough investigation by Cole Park, Park quotes journalist Tina Vasquez, who noted, In 1980, Janice Raymond, lesbian scholar and anti-trans activist, wrote a report for the Reagan administration titled, Technology on the Social and Ethical Aspects of Transsexual Surgery, which informed the official federal position on medical care for trans people. The paper's conclusion reads, the elimination of transsexualism is not best achieved by legislation prohibiting transsexual treatment and surgery, but rather by legislation that limits it and other legislation that lessens the support given to sexual stereotyping. Park adds, another example of right-wing players building off of TERF scholarship features Dr. Paul McHugh, a professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University. McHugh co-authored a statement that claims that respecting transgender children's identities causes harm and is akin to child abuse. Among McHugh's primary sources, Sheila Jeffries, another lesbian scholar and anti-trans activist. Jeffries recently retired after 24 years of teaching at the University of Melbourne, but remains highly influential. She refers to gender-affirming surgery as a form of mutilation and describes the practice of transgenderism, quote, quote, as harmful to women and a human rights violation. Park concludes, while the right lays siege to some of the most vulnerable members of the LGBT community, it's TERFs who may actually be guilty of drafting their talking points. TERFs and the right wing have the same goal, which Tanhill sums up perfectly, segregating transgender people from society and driving them from public life. For trans women athletes, our communities and even social safety nets are often defined by our sports, or at least that's been the case for me. So when someone like Julia Beck or Martina Navratilova tells me I shouldn't be playing the sport that I love as the woman that I am, it's more than an insult. It's a threat to something that's been a lifeline for me in some of the hardest times. And for what? For the sake of scoring ideological points in a political chess game being played on the backs of me and my sisters? I think that that's disgusting. But the collateral damage of these kinds of things gets really ridiculous, because gender policing campaigns often police cis women themselves. So, for instance, cis butch women are often harassed in bathrooms and asked to leave, even sometimes having the police called on them, having guns drawn on them, because someone mistakes them for a trans woman.
Preach.
And of course, there is the case of South African runner Caster Semenya, a cis woman, who was told by the Olympic Committee that her naturally occurring testosterone level was too high and that she needs to take hormone blockers to lower her testosterone levels if she wishes to compete against women in certain events. That decision, which, by the way, is absolutely fucking racist, was once upheld, now it's overturned, but we'll see what happens for the 2020 Summer Olympics, because it can still be upheld again. It's no coincidence that Caster is black, and the opponents that that filed the complaint against her were white. In fact, one of them was one of her teammates, a white South African runner who came in fourth place in her last competition against her. So you would think, yeah, right. Black women, black athletes in general, have always been targeted by having some sort of pseudoscientific biological advantages, and these should obviously be rejected with as much vigor as claims about trans women, especially black trans women. Yeah. At the end of the day, though, maybe the most frustrating part of all of this for me is that despite what transphobic academics want to believe, as athletes, trans women still face all the same sexism in sports that cis women face. So, for instance, I'll give an example. This is a Thorns jersey. Anybody from Portland? Yeah, go Thorns. Okay, so Thorns are the women's soccer team in Portland and regularly fill the stadium just like the Timbers do, the men's soccer team. I had to buy this jersey in an airport because the Thorns store is only open about 3 days a month, whereas the Timbers store is open 9 to 5, 6 days a week. So there you go, there's that. So if you want to be a soccer star who only has their jersey available 3 days a week, please, by all means, drastically change the course of your life and your body so that you can do that, I guess, you know, because that's the logical thing to do. So for instance, I'll give an example from my own life. A few years ago, I was asked to try out for a professional ultimate frisbee team in the, ODL, the American Ultimate Disc League, which has professional teams all over the country. So somebody on the coaching staff asked me to try out. They wanted me to come to the combine. But at the last minute, a decision was made nationally that women could no longer play in the league, so that the one woman who had ever played was kicked out. And any woman who made the combine couldn't play anymore, right? So it would officially be male only. So I got a call about an hour before the combine was set to start, and I was told that I was welcome to come out, I was welcome to try out, but no matter my performance, I wouldn't be given a spot on the team. So what no one seems to want to mention about trans women is in sports is, after everything, after all of the shit online, after all of the like fucking tests and everything like that, we're women. And for all women in all sports, it's an uphill battle. Women athletes are systematically paid less than men, including the U.S. women's soccer team, who make more profit per game than the men's team, and who are playing in the World Cup finals tomorrow, regularly win the finals, yeah, exactly, and are paid less than their less earning counterparts. Women's leagues are treated as an afterthought in every level of sports. Even the greatest tennis player of all time, Serena Williams, cannot get angry at bad calls like her male counterparts without being torn apart in the media. So, if this is what TERFs think trans women are pining for, I have got news for you. if Terps actually cared about women's sports, instead of just pushing their backwards transphobic agenda that paints women as permanently biologically determined second-class athletes, they could tackle some of these real issues affecting women athletes. But they don't. So just wrapping up, there's some comrades here from Minneapolis. Hey. So I hope that they'll talk about some of the work that they did with USA Powerlifting to stop their ban on transgender women, which I believe even caught Ilhan Omar's attention. Yes, I'll let you talk about that. That's really awesome. As for Ultimate, I'm happy to report that because of the courage of two women pioneers, Jesse Jones and Jesse Schaffner, the latter of whom organized a boycott against the AUDL after she had been playing, she was the one that was like kicked out, the AUDL now allows women to play, and that there were five women in the 23 teams in 2018, which is like not great, but it's cool. And as of 2019, a professional women's ultimate league started with comparable levels of viewership of the men, of the men's league. And this is women's with an X. So the inaugural season included teams like New York Gridlock, which announced their roster on social media, including their preferred pronouns, and had a message on their website that read, New York Gridlock invites cisgender and transgender women, women with an X, non-binary and intersex people ages 18 and up to come and try out and play for us. We recognize that gender is a continuum and exists beyond the binary. While professional sports still operate within the binary, Gridlock will employ best practices to maximize inclusivity and gender diversity on the women continuum. Which is like, yeah, teary-eyed. That's like, this is my sport. This is why I love it. This is a win for all women athletes, cis and trans alike. And as leagues like the Premier Ultimate League start springing up, I think we'll see a transformation in women's sports that could mean the end of the gender gap entirely, hopefully. I'm also grateful, just on a really personal note to totally wrap up, I'm really grateful that for the last 5 years I've been able to coach high school Ultimate. And I coach a mixed team, which means that I regularly get to see girls like just D the F out of dudes, like just mac it in their face, and they're like, ah, what? You know, like, so the idea that women can't play against men is absurd, because I see it happen all the time. But thank you. But yeah, my student athletes have made me a better player, a better person. I think more about these things because of them. And I hope that I've been able to pass maybe something that I've learned onto them. And I hope that I've passed this on to you as well, that sports too is a site of struggle. Thank you.